Welcome back to Coach Class with me, Dom Birch. This is the podcast where I get to speak to inspirational leaders and coaches from across the globe. And I'm absolutely delighted this week to welcome onto the podcast Mark Webb. Now, Mark is a public speaker, he's a campaigner, he's a social media and PR pro. He has worked for people as interesting as the Walt Disney Company, Dixon's, which became part of Carphone Warehouse, and more recently, Neuro Life Now, which we can talk about, and also works for an MS organisation, which is called Shift MS, where he's head of comms. Mark, welcome to Coach Class.
Thank you very much. Lovely to meet you finally, Dom, because it's this funny world that we live in, and we're both. It's funny you calling me a pro, but anyway, we're both pros or gurus or ninjas or bumblers, aren't we? You and I have known each other probably for a decade electronically, and yet this is the first time we've talked, and this is the way of the world.
I know, it's funny, and I think we met on Twitter back in the days where there probably weren't that many people on Twitter, and most of the sort of early people on Twitter were comms professionals and PR people and kind of like exploring it and going, oh, I better find out about this thing. And I think we probably have a shared connection, somebody like Hamish or something or other. But it was back in the day where you would sort of meet people on Twitter and you would, for me anyway, it was the first time where there was this sense of a rising tide floats all boats. You were kind of competing and in different organisations, but you felt the need to be open and kind of to share. Is that how it felt to you back then?
Yes, it did. And there's an element to it, you know, in the era of politics and tribalism that has kind of invaded this space now, it is a little bit harder to work on this social media and others. And yet it's still there. There are people still there. And if you cut out some of the anger and the noise and the fluff around the stuff, you can still talk to these amazing people. Stay in contact with people that you know. You're a Johnny Foreigner as far as I'm concerned, because you're well north of Watford. But you and I can talk and engage and sometimes help each other. And it has stayed magical, if nowadays somewhat annoying.
Yeah, I think we've had to sort of build coping mechanisms, haven't we, and kind of move away from it sometimes. I remember when I was right on Twitter at the start, I almost had this urge to catch up with where I'd left it before. And I remember somebody just saying to me, just let it be. It's a bit like a newspaper. You know, I don't read newspapers cover to cover every day. And then when I do and I pick one up, I go, there's so much stuff in this paper. I can't possibly read all of it in one day. And Twitter just sort of became a little bit like that. I sort of relaxed into it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you say about people kind of discovering it and connecting. You've alluded to some of the work I do, and the reason I work for Shift.ms, which is, as you mentioned, it's actually a social network and charity for MSers, people with multiple sclerosis, and Neuro Life Now, which is an app for anybody with any kind of neurological condition. So multiple sclerosis could be one, dementia another, Parkinson's another. So I'm on board with that because I have multiple sclerosis. And the magic of Twitter is that 10, 15 years ago, Dom, you and I were faxing out press releases, weren't we? And selling in stories to journalists on the phone. And then suddenly, fairly suddenly, Twitter came along and you were having the same conversations with journalists, but pretty much on a daily basis, when normally you'd phone them every quarter at business results or when there was a crisis or when you had a funky story. And then all of a sudden you were engaging with the same journalist, but on a more personal level. So you weren't talking them because you wanted to sell them a fab story in your Asda time and My Dixon's time, but you were talking them about what you'd seen on telly that day. And you were reporting back to your boss saying, hey, this journalist, he's interested in talking about warehouses today. What have we got? And it just became a whole new useful channel for us to talk to journalists and other sort of, here we go with a cliche words, other stakeholders. That coincided with my multiple sclerosis being diagnosed. I'd had it for a few years without realizing, and going downhill So not able to do that traditional PR stuff, but still being able to play an effective role in comms because of Twitter, because of social media, because I could still very much engage with the journalist I'd always gone on the piss with in London.
Now, as somebody who plays wheelchair rugby, who has a penchant for, I'd just say, absolutely wonderful and amazing colourful shirts. You've gone, hair dye's gone from blue to green in recent months. How do you use social media in order to be your whole self? Because there's something about you, Mark, that I just love, and it's you bring your whole self to every party.
It's a personal brand I've developed. MS is one of the worst illnesses out there. There's no cure, and it's generally progressive. The suicide rates are higher than for cancer or motor neurone disease. That's the one that tends to finish you off quite quickly. It's a disease that really does affect you in so many different ways. For me, you know me, I'm in a wheelchair, but it also affects you psychologically and mentally. There's an awful lot of people, and you can't blame them at all, feeling very sorry for themselves with MS. And I get that, and I get the anxiety around their future. And I happen to have been, I think, born, is it nature versus nurture? I don't know. I was born, I think, positive. And while I can stay positive, now it's not guaranteed that I will be able to stay positive, but while I can, I thought, sod it, let's go transparent. Let's be open. Let's be upbeat. And your mention of my my eclectic clothing choices, that really was founded on the realization that people were staring at me anyway, because I'm the poor, you know, let's call myself a cripple, the way people would be if they're staring at me rudely. If you're going to stare at me, stare at me because I'm funky or weird, as opposed to because I'm in a wheelchair. So that was the silly clothes. And then, frankly, the hair has developed out of lockdown. I'm still shielding. I'm still not going out until well into my second jab. And the two best purchases I made in lockdown are hair clippers. And I think I'll never go to a hairdresser's again. And a posh coffee machine, because I came to the realization that we were sending somebody out to get two Costa coffees for us every day. And within about 3 months, I'd paid off a 600 quid posh coffee machine and started saving money, but still having the nice coffee, which I funnily enough got in front of me. So the hair comes out of necessity, but then being silly. The clothing plus hair comes out of just wanting to present best to eye catch for the right reasons.
And I love on your blog, which is called One Man and His Catheters, and it says, I work in brackets for now. I love, I live, I have fun. And talk to me about, where do you get your inspiration from, right? Where do you get your energy and inspiration from? And I know that you all have days, won't you, where you are physically not full of energy, but you get this amazing drive that just sings through. When we've chatted, I mean, we just chat on Twitter. Now we're talking for the first time, which for me is a real privilege to actually talk to you for the first time. And one day we will come together in the physical presence of one another's beings, as it were. But where do you reach for when you're having those moments? You go, I need to get my energy. Or how do you keep your energy high? How do you keep your motivation high?
There's two different versions of energy here, because physically I'm always knackered. I start off the day, there's a good way of describing that, some people with MS describe it, sort of you start your day with your tank quarter full. So energy wise in terms of that, I'm knackered from the start. But in terms of positivity and drive and all that, in a sense I don't know, and that's not a very good answer. So there's a couple of things. One, I started life as a holiday rep, and then opened. I was part of the opening crew at Disneyland Paris, in 1992. So I was a bit of a floozy, let's say. I lived a wonderful, silly life, getting drunk and snogging, and that was wonderful. But then aged 30, I met my wife who also worked for Disney, another part of my now wife, who also worked for Disney, and just fell head over heels in love. And just, it caught me up short. I always assumed I would go through life being a naughty boy, and I just suddenly turned into this besotted bloke. And so some of the drive really comes from the realization that this MS is bloody horrible, but I've got a wife and two children to live up to be good for, to show a good example to my children. So that's, you know, you would hope most fathers and mothers would say that about their family, but that's very true for me. I need to stay positive for them. And then there are various people that I've met along the line. God, I can't think how many people inspired me at Disney and a 4-foot mouse. But also, you mentioned our common connection, Hamish. Hamish was one of, he was my boss at the time I was diagnosed. And he was part of a wonderful group of people who helped me through that sort of grief, confusion, numbness phase at the beginning of my diagnosis. And then going forward, people at Dixon's then helped me through the stages of walking drunk, so to speak, walking with a walking stick, coming into the office with a rollator, you know, a Zimmer frame of sorts, and finally a wheelchair. And at all those stages, they were just brilliant with me, helped me transfer my job properly and formally to a social media role as opposed to the long hours, weird times PR role. And then helped me when I had to leave because I was really that ill and moved to sort of multiple bits and bobs as I do now. So there would be a dozen other people at Dixon's who were inspirational to me. And now I'm in this disability world and campaigning not just for disability awareness, but all things diversity. And I just spend my whole time meeting and talking to wonderful people, and I feel blessed. So I guess it's a three-phase inspiration. I had so much fun, and I'm so grateful early on in my life. I've had so much love and support from family and Dixon's in the middle section. And now what I've got is purpose, a deeper purpose. When I was at Dixon's, I was selling washing machines and maybe some funky stuff like iPads, but you know, I was doing something very functional, just happened to love it and love retail. Now I'm doing something that I really passionately believe in. So I've got another zest for things and life and jobs and people and support and trying to make the world a better place.
And there's somebody you can inspire, and you talk about it on LinkedIn that, you know, you have the ability to thought provoke teams and customers. What's your preference? How do you get people to think? How do you really provoke people to have that deep sense of wonder?
It's that transparency, I think. For about 2 weeks a month, every 4 years, everybody thinks everybody in wheelchairs is inspirational. Because they break marathon records in the Paralympics and do amazing things and play that amazing sport that I try hard at, wheelchair rugby. And everybody thinks people in wheelchairs or disabled people are wonderful. For the rest of the time, we tend to be a little bit stigmatized. Not everybody's nasty, but it's a tough gig out there. People find it harder to find jobs. People find will be paid less, et cetera, for all the laws about recruiting and employing disabled people. It's just not a particularly fair world out there. So in the meantime, I can't inspire them with record-breaking wheelchair marathon times because I've got a progressive illness that weakens me. So I tootle along at the back of, you know, I'm the slowest on the wheelchair rugby court. I need to find other ways to, and this is why I say thought provoking as opposed to inspiring, because you guys are smiling at me, laughing at me because I make fun of the fact I'm still in bed. I make fun of the fact that I'm smiling. I make fun of the fact that I'm literally the worst player at wheelchair rugby. But why should I be inspiring just because I get out of bed? And that's why I try and make the difference between thought provoking and inspiring, despite knowing that I inspire people. I hope that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. What's your thoughts about the future? Maybe it's in relation to actually what we just talked about, equality, real equality, or maybe it's about your own personal future. As you look 6 months, 12 months down the line, and maybe it's coming out of shielding, maybe it's lots of questions that I've just asked all in one. I'm being the worst questioner in the world. What are your thoughts about, you know, tomorrow or the further future?
I hope and I think the pandemic, it's been bloody horrible, and it's been horrible for my community. With the exception that suddenly home working has been proved to be an acceptable solution. So there are some disabled people who've said, oh, I told you, showed you, and now we can Zoom together and talk together. So that's a positive. But I just hope we've had time to reassess what's important. I remember early on when China shut down, when it was really, the big countries were in shutdown. It was called the Great Pause. And that was referring to less industrial activity. But I think we all had that. We all had that navel gazing introspection. We were doing jigsaws. We were feeling sorry for ourselves. We were feeling lonely. We were excited about spending happy time together. And I just hope it's given us some time to reassess and to look forward to the new future, maybe just slightly different. I don't think it'll be as different as some people assume, because people do want to at least part-time, 3 days in, 2 days out, go back to the office. People do want to go back physically shopping. You know, you and I have both worked in retail, and I passionately believe that retail will be fine. It'll just evolve yet again. So I think I reckon we'll go, let's say, on a statistically rubbish guess, 80% back to where we were. But I just hope that 20% that's different is better, so that we are more equal. We are more appreciative of day-to-day life, of each other, of kindness. I hope we're less tribal, but I may fail there.
Well, if you get everything else and you fail on the last bit, I think I can live with that. Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on Coach Class. I feel the need to let you go, partly because a desperate Teams meeting approaches me quickly, but also you need to go off and rehearse because you're going to become Prime Minister in the next hour. So thank you. Appreciate it. It's been lovely meeting you, audibly meeting you here for the first time with our voices together. I look forward to seeing you in the real world when you're out of shielding and we can go and have a beer together.
Love you, Dom.
Take care. Don't go changing.
Cheers. Bye.